We're live and we're local. This is a Juneau Afternoon on Thursday, November 30th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. I'm back. On today's show, we'll find out more about relativity and quantum mechanics with Mark Finkelstein, this week's UAS Evening at Egan speaker. We'll get a preview of Perseverance Theater's current production of Steel Magnolias. Mercedes Munoz will be here to talk about her first Friday exhibit at the City Museum. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here on a Juneau Afternoon. Taking a look at weather for the rest of today, widespread rain showers with highs around 40. And tonight, more rain, scattered snow showers, little or no accumulation, lows around 30. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Having a positive role model is often seen as one of the major factors young people have in making positive choices in life and finding success. In the final story in our series, State of Change, reporter Jim Kent visits with two Lakota teenagers on the Pine Ridge Reservation who are working to make a difference in the lives of students at the Red Cloud Indian School.
Alejandro Rima loves basketball, and that's a good thing, because when he was growing up, he frequently turned to his coach for answers about the game or school or whatever was on his mind. At 16, Rima now understands how important it is to have a role model when you're young. That's why he's part of Thunder Valley's youth mentorship program.
I always want to be there for like these little kids because I know that they have problems at home and running the PE class, and that's kind of like a positive way, like something positive for them to like get away from their situations at home.
Those little kids are the students Rima mentors in grades K through 8, both boys and girls. And being there for the students is not only good for them, but Rima finds a positive in it for himself when he's having his own doubts and difficult days.
When I like start to struggle and I kind of just like don't really like want to try like as hard with school or sports or anything, I just remember I have kids looking up to me and I have people that like are looking up to me that I still need to like, go hard for them.
Kenneth Franks is on-site director for the two-year-old youth mentorship program.
There were kind of like a tier system of mentors almost, where you have middle schoolers that were the elementary kids were looking up to, and then the high school kids who worked for us kind of instilled that whole, I guess, paradigm, that whole viewpoint of mentors kind of all throughout the high school and all throughout the school here at Red Cloud.
Frank says key to the program's success is finding others who are as passionate about mentoring as he is. Ensuring that the mentorship doesn't just focus on sports is also important. That's why there's a cultural component to the program, from elders teaching students about their traditions to talks about women's rights. What Franks would like all the students to learn is what helped him succeed when he moved off the reservation to attend college. That in the end, the most important part of who they are is their cultural identity. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier Wednesday in a statement called on President Trump to leave office. Frazier was responding to the president's actions Monday during a White House ceremony honoring Native American code talkers. Frazier says the president had the opportunity to honor veterans and bridge gaps in the relationship tribes have with the federal government, but instead chose to act in disgrace. President Trump made a reference to Pocahontas during the event, which he repeatedly uses as an insult directed at U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren. Tribal leaders across the country and leaders of national Native organizations have since released statements denouncing Trump's use of the name, calling it a racial slur, which the White House has denied it is. Frazier says the president used the opportunity to honor Native warriors to make a political attack. Frazier's statement goes on to say, quote, "Leave the office you bought and take your swamp things with you." New Mexico's congressional delegation says the full Senate passed a bill to promote the preservation of Native languages. The Esther Martinez Native American Languages Preservation Act received unanimous consent Wednesday. The bill provides grants to educational organizations and will reauthorize federal Native language programs through 2023. It now heads to the U.S. House. The language bill was one of nine Native American bills passed by the full Senate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year. Learn more at aaip.org. Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? You can join our Historical Trauma Master Class beginning February 2018. Registration deadline is December 1 at freedomlodge.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and my first guest today is Mark Finkelstein, expert on space and aerospace, and this week's Evening at Egan speaker. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about yourself. How did you become a subject matter expert on these topics?
Well, my whole career was in the aerospace industry, and I studied electrical engineering and nuclear engineering in college, and I went to work. My first job was at actually Lawrence National Laboratory doing laser fusion research. And then that kind of evolved into looking at, since laser fusion also deals with plasma physics, that evolved into looking at things that come back into the atmosphere from space, which also generate plasmas. So started working with space systems and evaluations, and then development of space systems. Worked for Hughes Aircraft for a while. I was the chief scientist of their Advanced Concepts Directorate in Space and Communications Group. Then I started my own business as an aerospace consultant, and that ran for about 17 years, and I retired and moved to Juneau.
Wow. Do you consider yourself to be a rocket scientist?
People have called me that, but I don't know if that's appropriate.
Well, you've certainly had a long career, and I'm sure you'll be an excellent speaker for this Friday. Tell me, what's the most exciting cosmic phenomenon you've ever witnessed?
Actually, the recent eclipse was pretty cool. I mean, it's hard not to be excited about that. You know, it's kind of interesting in that. So we live on this planet, right? And we've got a moon that's about 250,000 miles away, and the sun is about 93 million miles away. And in order to make this eclipse work in a spectacular fashion, the moon has to just almost exactly cover the sun, which means the size of the moon has to be just right for its distance, and the size of the sun has to be just right for its distance. And that may not be unique in the universe, but it certainly is unusual. And then you get the spectacular display where stars come out in the daytime, and you get this ring of fire around, and I'm always impressed with that.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. I didn't travel to the path or anything, but I definitely listened to it and watched the video coverage.
Yeah, we went down to Idaho to watch it, and we were in the zone of totality.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I don't want to miss out, so next time it comes around, I'm going to make sure I'm in the path.
Okay.
In your talk this Friday, one of the things you'll be doing is making some connections between the underlying concepts of relativity and quantum mechanics and matter to everyday things and ideas. And I was wondering if you could share an example of that.
Sure. So, you know, we talk about quantum mechanics and relativity as this esoteric theoretical physics thing that you need, that you learn in graduate school or you learn on TV through some Carl Sagan talk or something like that. The reality is that it really does touch us on an everyday level. And a lot of the things that relativity has predicted and quantum mechanics predict turn into devices. And I've got an engineering background, so I really like that concept. So when you could take a theory and you can build something with it, like take the theory of relativity and build GPS, take quantum mechanics and build a laser or a transistor or a computer chip, this really makes a lot of difference in terms of understanding and in terms of actually relating it to our day-to-day lives. So, you know, we've got lights that are light-emitting diode lights. light-emitting diodes are only possible because of quantum interactions from energy levels that are discrete as opposed to continuous. And I'll talk more about that on my talk. But it's a connection, and we use these things in everyday life, and it's nice if you could understand where the stuff comes from.
And the importance of studying all right. that and how the science and the engineering behind all these things that we love, like our devices.
That Your cell phone.
yeah, right. that we wouldn't have if you guys weren't studying that sort of thing. In the blurb for your talk, it's stated that recent advances have lent insights into questions about whether or not we have free will or whether something can simply spring into existence. Are you going to attempt to answer those questions?
I am. I'm going to at least give a partial answer to those questions.
At least a partial answer.
At least a partial answer. And really, you know, while science doesn't know everything and never will, it's come a long way, and especially in the last 100 years. And so the question of free will, for instance, is really a question of can you predict things based on observation? So if I, you know, if I look at a pool table and there's a cue ball and an eight ball and I want to shoot it into the corner pocket, I could calculate the angles and I could calculate how I have to hit the cue ball to make that happen. Well, if that's the case, if the whole universe works like that, then it means that the universe is predictable. It means that what happens today, the setup today of that pool table, determines what's going to happen a second from now. And if that's the case, you don't have free will. But the question is that the case? And I'll talk about that.
Okay. Certainly raising a lot of questions in my mind. For example, if the pool, if the person behind the pool cue didn't shoot, then you can't really predict what would happen next. I guess you could predict that nothing would happen.
I'm not sure how to answer that, but that kind of comes back to the original question. If the person behind the pool cue decides not to shoot, does he really decide that, or does he make that decision based on something that happened to him a minute prior or 10 minutes prior? And that gets back to this free will, and it's circuitous. But there really is an answer to this.
That's fascinating. Also, the question of whether something can simply spring into existence, you know, that I've always wondered about that myself. So is there anything you'd like to say about that?
Well, you've got to define existence on this. So, for instance, I take a piece of empty space. If there's energy in that empty space, that energy can be converted to mass. We don't see that energy. We see the mass that it's converted into. And in fact, that's done in laboratories all around the world with particle accelerators, which the press likes to call atom smashers. If you generate a high enough energy field, things will pop into, I don't want to use the word existence, but it's a transformation, not a creation.
I understand. Good answer. What else will you be, will your talk entail? Will it contain any interactive elements?
So I'm going to show some simulations. I'm going to show a lot of colored pictures and little video clips of things that are actually happening that relate to the contents of the talk, and try to make it interesting and try to make it at a level where people could connect their intuition to what's going on.
Is this the first time you've given this presentation?
It is.
Wow. Do you get stage fright?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I've given other presentations.
Well, you don't seem very nervous right now. Space is something that just really sparks the imagination. It's vast and it's so mysterious. What do you think's out there that we haven't discovered yet?
I think there's life out there. I don't know what kind of life. You know, we talked about this prior to the radio coming on, but I do think there's life out there. You know, it's so vast. The universe that we see is about 14 billion light years across, and a light year is 6 trillion miles. And there are so many stars, and now we've already found about 2,000 planets that rotate about stars in our current galaxy, in our own galaxy. And so it's hard to imagine that if really so many stars have planets, and we've only found the beginnings of this, it's a drop in the bucket, that on none of those planets life couldn't have evolved. It's just hard to imagine that.
I agree. It's so fun to think about. No wonder so many movies and TV shows and books and everything get written and made about space. It's pretty cool. The talk is this Friday. It's at 7 p.m. It will be held at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. and it takes place in the Egan Library. Where can we find more information?
I think there's a website for that.
Okay.
And I think if you just go to the UAS website and search for Evening at Egan, there's a little bit of a descriptor in there.
Great. Well, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're speaking with Mark Finkelstein, expert on space and aerospace, this week's Evening at Egan speaker. Mark, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think that pretty much does it. I hope you guys can come.
Great. I hope everyone comes as well. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thank you.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mommy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars? It's on America's tortured brow. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow, and now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at the
Support comes from Alaska Powder Descents, presenting 2 showings of Teton Gravity Research's Rogue Elements, December 8th at Rockwell Ballroom. The 6 p.m. is all ages, and the 8:30 p.m. is 21 and over only. Tickets at the door. More at alaskapowder.com.
This gallery walk, see new perspectives, the KTOO staff and volunteer photography show up through the month of December. Between our producers, reporters, photographers, administrators, volunteer DJs, and engineers, we public media people love to take pictures. Join us for a first Friday gallery walk reception at 4 p.m. on December 1st and share our professional and personal perspectives of the world.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It is 20 minutes after the hour. And with me in the studio are representatives of Perseverance Theater here to talk about Steel Magnolias. Welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hey.
All right. We've got Naomi Prentice, who's playing the character Shelby, and Katie Jensen, who's playing Emmeline, and Frank is playing himself. A new character.
Right, I'll be me. And I think it's Malin.
Yeah, it's Malin.
Malin, I'm sorry.
But, it's one of those southern things.
Yeah. And you can call me Emmeline for the sake of this interview.
I even practiced and wrote it out. All right, well, for those who don't know, what's the play about, Steel Magnolias?
Steel Magnolias is based in a hair salon, Truvy's Hair Salon, and it's basically just where a group of ladies go to get their hair cut, curled, colored, and they sit around gossiping. So it's basically 2 hours of drinking coffee and gossiping. but it's the story is driven around Malin's daughter, Shelby, and some kind of major health issues that she goes through and how the women handle it and how they handle the emotional turmoil of their lives. Which, as Southern women, is a little different than, I'd say, the rest of the country.
But what's really great about it is the fact that it takes place in a hair salon, but there's, you know, always that kind of place in a community where people develop and have their community. And for this particular group, it is the salon, so it's not about the salon. It's more about this group of women who have – they've created kind of their own family unit of knowing each other for years and, I mean, years and years and years since they were young. And, you know, watch Shelby grow up. And so it's just this, there's always this touchstone that every community has or a group of friends has. And for this particular group of friends, it is a salon. And there's things in when you talk to your hairdresser, that you'll tell to your hairdresser that you don't want to tell anybody else.
So true.
Well, I think one of the things that really stood out for me, I just read the script when I read it, is that it does take place in the salon and it's kind of, you know, contained within this area, but they're described so much more and you get to know this town and you get to know the other people within this town just by the characters in the play talking about
they
it.
Don't
it,
ever – Yeah. Show up on stage physically.
And it, yeah, and just describes everything outside so well, and I think it's really an amazing
life journey of what these women go through in the period of time that the play takes place.
Which and it's hilarious.
It is really funny.
It's a comedy, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, the movie was pretty popular when it came out. I think it was late 80s, like 1989. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there was anyone in the cast who had never seen either the play or the film.
Well, I think that we do have one, Stacy, who plays Truvy.
She's the owner of the salon.
And if you're correlating to the movie, that's the Dolly Parton role, but it's actually it's Truvy. So Stacy hadn't seen it before.
No, she'd never seen it. I tried to get her to watch it beforehand. She's my wife. Or I'm her husband. I tried to get her to watch it before, and she was like, nope, I don't want it to affect my, you know, my performance. I mean, she obviously knew of the movie and knew of the play and knew everything about it. She just
– And that's a real, you know, kind of a actor danger is if there has been a film made of it, at least myself, you always want to be really, really careful that – when you're in the production to not watch the movie because there's a tendency to copy the performances. Mm-hmm. And you need to let the play be the play rather than copying someone else's performance.
Right. I'd say as far as the film goes versus our version of the play, there are absolutely characters that when you're watching the play, you will be like, oh, that's definitely who that person was in the movie. Just like little nuances or how things are delivered, how lines are delivered. But then there are also moments in each of our performances that are just vastly different. I mean, for me, I can watch the movie and think, oh, wow, she did that really well. You know, I'm going to steal that. Whereas there might be another line that I was like, I don't really understand why she delivered it that way. So I'll do it differently for my role. So, you know, it's kind of picking and choosing.
Yeah.
I call it selective stealing.
And you just want to, do honor to the playwright and let the text have its life. And for us to create the characters from his text.
one of the things I picked up on when we were chatting before was that one of the main differences between the play and the movie is that there are no male characters in the play.
Nope. They were written in for the sake of the movie.
So it's just the ladies. Yep.
Just the ladies.
And I'm really interested to see how Stacey plays Truvy, not having ever seen the movie before, because it's kind of an iconic role.
Yeah.
And you two play mother and daughter, Katie and Naomi. Mm-hmm. So how'd you guys handle that? Did you know each other before this production?
No. I'm from Louisiana originally, so they brought me up here for this production. I didn't know anybody here. I would say at first, you know, it's definitely kind of, I wouldn't say uncomfortable, but maybe awkward trying to make yourself feel this maternal, paternal connection to someone that you don't know. But we spent so much time together and so much time in rehearsals that really by the time we were performing in Anchorage, it was just, I mean, we just clicked. You know, this is my mom.
And for me, it was, it all happens in the rehearsal room. I just, as soon as we started working our first scenes together, because we have quite a few duets, it's just, I felt a natural chemistry with Naomi, and it was just awesome. So it's... And I'm kind of motherly anyway, so.
Now, the play has already done its run in Anchorage. How was it received?
Oh, it was great. We had people coming back 2-3 times to see it.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think we didn't have a standing ovation. I mean, this show
We did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every single night, there were people on their feet. Sorry, I said that kind of backwards. But no, it was... it was very, very well received. I mean, it's one of those plays that everyone can relate to. You know, it's going to make you laugh. It's going to make you cry in the best way. And it's really a beautiful show. And if you don't take away anything from it super emotionally, you'll at least come and have a really fun time.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what's the meaning behind the title of the play, Steel Magnolias?
You want to take this one, Mama?
Well, it's kind of there in the title, in that magnolias are this beautiful, soft, not delicate, but very feminine flower that grows on a tree, which is quite strong, and it's also very southern. And there's steel is something that's hard and strong, and there actually is some lines in the show that this comparison about men are supposed to be made of steel, and they're not. The women are more that are stronger in their softness of the magnolias. I don't know. Is that my blathering?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's the juxtaposition of those two things: something, you know, very masculine, something very feminine. It doesn't mean that they have to be separated. It's those magnolias are that strength.
Right on. I like it.
Also, it's Louisiana state flower.
Yeah. So.
And the play is set in Louisiana.
Correct.
Yeah.
You must have been a natural choice for the role of Shelby.
Oh, yeah.
And apart from it being a classic, what inspired Perseverance Theater to select this production for the season?
Well, I mean, it's a wonderful character piece. And it's a well-received, well-loved, you know, script that's been around forever. I mean, it was a great play before it became a movie. And so when you read the script the first time, and something like the playwright wrote it in a short amount of time, mm-hmm. too.
10 days.
10 days, yeah. So it's like when you read it, you're just like – it just jumps off the page. So I think when Perseverance got the opportunity to do this show, they jumped on it.
And there's some – some of his own personal experience mm-hmm. is in it. And if you're familiar with any Tennessee Williams, it has kind of that feeling these relationships and that kind of closeness is something that's very unique to the South. And I don't know, it's a feminine spirit, but in the very, very best and awesome and surprising way.
I think it also does so well because none of these, he didn't write these characters as caricatures. They're mm-hmm. all real, mm-hmm. genuine people that are going through life and dealing with their issues. And I think the hilarity comes through the everyday crises that we go through as human beings that are kind of small in the grander scheme of things.
And you can hear yourself and see yourself as an audience member, I think.
Yeah.
Because I know that audience members are just like, oh, I say that to my daughter all the time. I mean, sometimes I have things that come out of my mouth. It's like, oh my God, I remember my mom saying that to me.
From playwright's perspective, I just loved, you know, how it transports you to this place. One of the things I like to do when I write is try to get things that are very localized and specific. And there's so many things within this particular play, within the text, that are so specific to that area. You know, I never heard a cuppa, cuppa, cuppa until this play. That it was like, what is that? My wife's like, oh, she gets really excited. She was born in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Wow.
And so she's, you know, and I dragged her up here to the beautiful north. but it's very specific, and things rang true to her and kind of brought her back to that very specific area. So I really like that about the script.
Does the armadillo cake make an appearance?
Oh, it doesn't.
Okay.
I wish.
Maybe at the after party. All right. When can we see it?
We have our first preview tonight, 7:30, Perseverance Theater. Tonight's a pay-as-you-can. We have another pay-as-you-can on Sunday, and then the final pay-as-you-can is on Thursday. But it runs the whole month of December, so it opens tomorrow and runs all the way through the 31st.
The whole month.
The whole month. And, you know, so far, you know, from the staff perspective, it's gotten excellent response. You know, working the public market last week, everyone was really excited, so we hope everyone gets their tickets and comes.
Oh, that's great. All right. Is there anything else you want to add about the show or about Perseverance Theater?
It's just – don't miss it.
Bring your tissues.
Bring it, and also, because you're just going to laugh, it's an amazing piece. Carolyn Howarth, the director, has done an incredible job. She's a master at comedy and tragedy. And this particular group of women in this cast is exceptional. So I love them all, and I – think that Juno will love it.
I think it's a real treat. I'm excited to see it, and thanks for being here today, and I'm sure you'll have no trouble drawing crowds to this performance. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yay!
Hey, thanks for having us.
Sure. Thank you.
is Bird Note. Back in grade school, we all likely had a teacher with an uncanny ability, even with her back turned, to sense when we were up to no good. You might say she had eyes in the back of her head. In nature, there are a few birds that actually appear to have eyes in the back of their heads. Birds like the northern pygmy owl have large, black, eye-shaped markings on the feathered back of their brown heads, a plumage adaptation that creates a pair of false eyes. But why? One theory is that large false eyes may deter predators. They create the illusion that the pygmy owl is much bigger than its 6 3/4 inch size. A more current theory is that the false eyes help protect the pygmy owl's true eyes. The little owl, which is active during daylight, is often subject to aggressive mobbing. Small birds will surround, scold, and even strike the pygmy owl, with some attacks directed at its eyes. If the large false eyes can take the brunt of these attacks, little harm will come to the owl's vulnerable true eyes. There's always more to the story at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support for BirdNote comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffee for holiday giving. More at birdnote.org/songbird.
Open enrollment on the Health Insurance Marketplace is only 6 weeks long, from November 1st to December 15th. Take time to figure out your 2018 income and be prepared for November 1st. Marketplace plans will cost less in 2018, so if you're uninsured, now is the time to get covered. Health insurance allows you to get the care you need and protects you from high, unexpected medical costs. To explore your options, call Search Outreach at 966-8662 for free assistance. We serve everyone.
The Karen and Spotlight Series is thrilled to present Harrison B. in concert this December 6th at the Gold Town Theater. Acoustic Christmas will feature Harrison B. performing his original songs stripped down to vocals and guitar, as well as your requested holiday favorites. Tickets are available in advance online only at karenn.org and at the door. Tickets are sure to sell out, so get yours early. That's Harrison B. performing the next Karen and Spotlight show December 6th at 7 at the Gold Town.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It is 22 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here to talk about First Friday at the City Museum. I've got Barbara Craver, Allison Borges, and Mercedes Munoz. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome. You're all welcome. Mercedes, we'll start with you. You're actually the gallery director at the Canvas, so you're in talking about that a lot, but your exhibit will be at the Juno Douglas City Museum this Friday. So how did that come about?
That's a hard question.
I didn't mean for it to be a hard question.
How did it come about? Well, it's been planned for almost 2 years now. So I started working this year on everything. I work better under pressure. And the title of my show is Moments. And it's, you know, the subject matter is sketchbook drawings that I've done throughout the year. And the focus, I really wanted to be on the little moments that are sometimes simple but memorable. And so some of my drawings, you know, it's not to say that a drawing of an old-fashioned wood stove is what's meaningful to me. That's one of the drawings. But the moment that I drew that, I was sitting in a tiny one-room cabin in bed drinking coffee and watching my daughter and husband read books together while I sketched. So, a lot of my drawings are simple and fun and playful. And,
And they have little stories behind them.
Yes.
I thought that I'd read there was ceramics as well.
I'm sorry, I should have clarified that. Yes.
Okay.
It's all pottery. Yeah.
I have pottery with your sketches sort of engraved?
Yes,
or
thank you. Yeah, I have about 110 ceramic pieces, and the clay body I use is porcelain, so it fires white, and they're all adorned with sketchbook drawings. I do a decal transfer process to get those drawings on there. And then on top of that, I have this blue bubble technique and some gold on there, too.
Wow, they sound beautiful.
Thank you.
I also understand that plant life is a subject you really enjoy working with. So do you have any favorite plants?
Not really. It's just more about my surroundings. It's obviously beautiful, and they don't move, so that's nice. A lot of my sketches, if you see my work and my pottery, you'll see a lot of them are really rough, and that was a little bit challenging for my type A personality to allow myself to exhibit those, but I really wanted the focus to be on those, like, true moments and not so much a resolved drawing, because that wouldn't be reflective of where I was at that time.
Nice. Did you say there's over 100 pieces?
Yeah, I have about 110.
They all be on display?
Yep.
And they're also available for purchase?
Yes.
For that art/ceramic lover in your life?
They will be.
And they are functional, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have about 25 dinner plates. A lot of tea bowls, which are basically a mug shape without a handle. Mm. And I have a few vases, some bud vases, a platter, big bowl, coffee mugs. I think that's it. Some small bowls. Yeah.
Wow. How are those all going to fit in the City Museum?
They are.
They fit, and they look really beautiful.
Yeah, so it's all set up and ready to go.
Yes. It is.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Barbara Craver is also here, and she has a calendar that will be available for purchase at the City Museum gift shop. Barbara, how would you describe that, your calendar, your work, for someone who's never seen it?
Let's see. The calendar is generally some of my paintings that I've done in the past. Every year I try and put the ones that I've done in the past year. This year, my focus of my practice has been a lot of portrait painting. And so I used some current landscape paintings and then older landscape paintings. And the theme this year is my Juno. And I think the reason that the city asked me if they could sell my calendar is because last year I had a show at the City Museum in December called Juno Tlingit Place Names. And I had a calendar that focused on Juno places and putting the names of the places in Tlingit in the calendar because I love Juno and also because I'm very interested in the Tlingit language. And I was hoping to help people get their toes wet. And so this year I have just an assortment of my paintings, but I have tried to include in each month the name of the month under the moon calendar based on the cake cycle, which is one that I found online. Apparently each place would not necessarily have a uniform name for each month, but it is based on the moon cycle, and I'm not particularly clear about how that was, if it was the new moon or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But so I'm just putting little bits of Tlingit into my calendar, and occasionally a title will be named after something that I know the Tlingit word for.
Do you have a pronunciation guide in there too?
I don't, but there's some great resources online, and you can go to YouTube for Tlingit language alphabet and pronunciation, and then there's an amazing website called tlingitlanguage.com that Lance Twitchell's put out.
Oh, yeah.
There's amazing resources.
He's attempted to teach me a couple of words on the air before.
You know, if a baby can learn it, you can. It's just harder
for us. I don't know about that.
It's harder for us, but it's possible.
Yes. Well, I do try. I pick up things here and there. And your calendar is beautiful. Thank you for bringing it in so that I could see it. It's really lovely. And
thank you.
I'm sure they'll just sell like hotcakes. Okay. So the opening reception where you can see Mercedes Ceramics and also pick up Barbara's calendar. That's this Friday, December 1st, 4:30 to 7 p.m. at the City Museum, free and open to the public. Where can we get some more information about that?
Yeah, you can call the museum at 586-3572. We also post all our events online, so you can visit our website at www.juno.org/library/museum. We also have a Facebook page, Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum Facebook page. You can join as well.
Fantastic. And is there anything else going on at the City Museum this
winter? Yeah. So on December 9th, which is a Saturday from 10:30 to noon at the museum, We will be hosting Fred Thorstensen and Annette Smith, who will be presenting on the sinking of the SS Princess Sophia, which is part of our ongoing coffee and collections program. So we provide the coffee, and you can come and learn on a, you know, it's a great way to spend a cold, rainy day. Little bit about our presenters. Fred is a member of the Alaska Pioneers. He knows a lot about this story. And Annette is a scuba diver and an underwater photographer, and she will be showing footage of the wreckage from bow to stern. And so that's coming up on the 9th. We have our Friends annual meeting on the 7th of December. This is a meeting of the Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum. It's their annual members meeting, but they are also have a presentation that's open to the public by Sidney Lawrence. He will be speaking
by Sidney Lawrence.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gosh, by Kelsey. Thank you so
I'm
much.
Coming,
I'm looking at my notes backwards. Yeah, that would be strange. By Kelsler
it's
Woodward.
It's amazing, really.
Kelsler Woodward speaking on Sidney Lawrence and the Juno landscape, which we have Bend in the River is a painting done by Sidney Lawrence that was donated to the museum by the Friends. And this is you know, a great opportunity to learn more about that and hear the speaker.
And see the painting in person.
And see the painting in person at the City Museum. Yeah. So that's that happens on the 7th, like I said, and they're asking just for a $5 donation if you're not a member. But if you're already a member, it's free.
How do you become a member?
You can contact the Friends. They have a website at www.fojdcm.org, but you can also call us. You can call the museum, which would be the best way to go about that.
Cool. I'm a huge fan of the City Museum. I really love to check it out on First Friday. You guys do super interesting things all year round.
I was going to have the museum promote its gift shop because that's why they're selling my calendar. But there are just a great variety of locally made handcrafts, prints, art-related history, etc. Really
there's
nice.
A lot of great stuff. It's a fantastic gift shop.
It's
You're absolutely right.
Really expanded. And we have signed prints. We have great stocking stuffers. We have jewelry by Thais Shaw that's crystal and copper and silver. We have local books, one by Ishmael Hope. Lots of great things to choose from that are greatly priced and make great gifts for family and self, too.
There's free admission this
Free
month,
admission,
right?
Thanks to a generous donation by Michelle and Robert Storr all through December.
Fantastic. That's really great news.
Yeah.
I always come on First Friday because it's free.
Yeah.
Come anytime.
And, but I think that becoming a member is a great way to support the museum, and I hope that folks will consider doing that going forward. Because you guys are always putting on great stuff, and so we're lucky to have you in the community.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Barbara, Mercedes, and
Alyssa.
Sorry. Thank you so much for coming by today. Anything else you'd like to add?
Gunoschish.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you
us.
For having okay.
The stars were just the holes punched in the shoebox that gives a creature all to breathe, as if every constellation was just a form of veneration, from a captor to enormous to conceive. The moonbeam like a coach from junior high school, when players hack their way through each opposing team. Shining, felt like the wider he was.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me again for her weekly appearance, Nancy DeCherney, the one and only with Arts Up. Welcome
hey,
back
are
to
you?
The show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. You said you've got a lot, so let's get right into it.
This is the big weekend in Juno for First Fridays, of course. It's Gallery Walk. There's a million things going on, at least. I'm going to start out by something that I forgot to mention the other day, which is that wearable art tickets go on sale tomorrow morning for Juno Arts Council members.
Goodness. It's that time of year again.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I don't know how that happened. 10 o'clock in the morning, we'll be doing that. You need to be an active member of the Arts Council to get that. And you've already talked to the Steel Magnolias. There is a pay-as-you-can preview tonight, so you could go get that out of the way. But
I think that's worth repeating.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody loves those pay-as-you-can nights.
And
me.
It's the weekend for Nutcracker, so be sure to check that out. Okay, so you want to start your First Friday Gallery Walk adventure over here at the Jack. And one of the reasons is you can park over here, and there's the trolley that's going to be running people around, so you don't have to walk.
The trolley, is that a new thing?
It's a new thing just for this First Friday. They'll be running shuttles around. The Downtown Business Association, I believe, set that up. So know that. You can come to the Jack, get your little map, your little guide, and then take the trolley to all the other places. We're calling this the Cultural Corridor. Now, I noticed as I came upstairs that you have a bunch of photos up, but they're all covered up, so mm-hmm. nobody can see them until First Friday.
Correct.
So KTOO has a photography exhibit that I can't see.
That's right. That's right.
Is that right?
we've been advertising it. It's all of our volunteers and staff photos.
Cool. So we have Descendants of the Masters, Chilkat Faces, woven by students of Clarissa Rizal and Jenny Clenot. We also have the Floyd Dryden Jazz Band and Choir. We have a special on ornaments and holiday cards. And we have a gift wrapping station, which will be up the whole month, by the way. So, and then we'll be followed by a ballroom dance. But I want to talk just a little bit about the Chilkat Weavers. If you've ever been a little bit curious about how the Chilkat blanket weaving process works, this is a really good time exhibit to come and see. Everybody was making small sort of foot by foot maybe faces, Chilkat blanket faces, and not everybody's is completed, so you can see them in the transition from start to finish. It's a lovely show.
Hey, so, I think we're having them on the show on A Juno Afternoon tomorrow.
Good.
To talk
more
about
Lily
that.
Can talk more in depth about that. Over at the APK, the SLAM, we've got As We See It, 8 Contemporary Native American Photographers and Filmmakers. This has been curated by Suzanne Frick and Indiana Young, and Indiana will be doing a talk at 7 o'clock, so you can stop in there. And
they're coming tomorrow, too.
All right. Previews of coming attractions we have here.
It's a good thing I came today.
Over at COPA, Jim Fowler will have his things up. A Little Bazaar, which is a little shop that is over by the whale down in the area by the hotel and the state offices down there. She has live music by Frank Delaplane, and it's the grand opening of 60 Degree North. It's a new coffee shape. Shop. So stop in, wander over there. The Prospector, by the way, is having a wine tasting from 5 to 7. So if you just don't want to do any of that stuff, you can do that. As we head over, you just were talking with Mercedes and Barbara about the things that are going on at the City Museum. So head up in that direction. We have, if you go over across on as you're going up the hill, M.K. McNaughton and Adam Dimmitt are at the Sketch Studio. M.K.'s shop is sort of in the parking lot behind the restaurant, the Chinese restaurant mm-hmm. there. So you can do that. I'm sort of out of order here, but let's just say you're on Front Street for the sake of argument. Heritage Coffee will be having photos with Santa. This is the 8th grade Girl Scout soccer team is doing this as a fundraiser, so you can bring your camera or cell phone and your family and have a festive Santa photo there. Alaska Robotics, Pat Race has got a new set of postcards. They sound wonderful. It's the Postcards from Juno Series 2. It includes landmarks like the Eye on Mount Juno and just a whole bunch of the sparkling blue tanzanite that we're famous for. I mean, you know, Pat, he's got a sense of humor that's second to none. So the Front Street Clinic will have a holiday open house. They have Dan Hobson playing and Mark Kelly will be there. There will be food and photography and hot cider, food by Grumpy's, Jamie's Raw Food Snacks, and Pie in the Sky. They are accepting donations of socks and gloves. So in the spirit of giving, bring some of those to hand out. I think there's live music at the Imperial. They're blocking off Front Street, by the way. Mm-hmm. So all over, there'll be pop-up things happening in Front Street and all around. Annie Kales has Rick Clare and Jenna O'Fontanella. Hearthside Books has Sarah Asper-Smith and Mitch Watley and Jack Marshall, both doing book signings. Jack has got the Empire Building, the Juno Recaptured, or Juno Empire book, Juno Recaptured. And Sarah, of course, is I Would Tuck You In. So stop in at the bookstore. And at the end of the street, there's Kindred Post. And she has, it's in here somewhere, a photo booth, I think it is. We'll get to that. It's out of order here. Go up Seward Street. Also, the Walter Soboloff Building has visual artists, dance performances, and book readings. They will have Rhonda Butler, Sam Shakely, Gail Diblitz, Renee Culp, Kathleen Rado, Jean Chilton, and Levi Chilton, and Lance Caesar, who will be, he'll be doing carving in the Dolores Churchill Building, our residence room, and they will have Katrina Hotch reading from the new Baby Raven Reads books, and Yis Kuu is performing at 6 and then going out into the street and performing on Front Street, and they're followed by Woosh Jean at 6:45. The Heritage Store has door prizes. There will be all sorts of things going on there, so stop in. Rookery Cafe has John Lyman bamboo fly rods. He makes beautiful bamboo fly rods, so stop in there. Rainy Retreat Books has the Rob Cohen Trio, and they have all of their rare and collectible books on 15% off.
About 30 seconds.
We have 30 seconds? We already blew past 10 minutes?
Time flies when you're having fun.
When we're having fun. So just come by the art. There's just so many things going on. You can't even begin. Santa's going to be walking the front docks.
Can't beat that. Can't,
and there's babysitting in the Senate building. So come on out for Gallery Walk. We want to see you.
It's a great time. It's one of the most exciting events of the year. It's the best first Friday of the year. Nancy, thanks so much for being here today. Sorry we couldn't get all the information in, but don't worry. People will be down to check it out. Jeff Brown is the producer of Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening.